Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Game 3 of the ALCS, about 5 hours away. You can listen to it right here, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Series tied at a game apiece. Astros come from behind fashion, winning game 1. Game 2, really never a game. The Red Sox hitting back-to-back, or hitting grand slams and back-to-back innings. J.D. Martinez, the two-run. I hate J.D. Martinez, by the way. Like, sports hate. I don't hate J.D. Martinez. I hate when he's in the box facing the Astros, because I feel like good things are about to happen when J.D. Martinez hits the baseball.
He does that weird thing after every pitch where he, like, just kind of Jason Kidd at the free throw line. He kind of
puckers that. And
does. I don't know what that's symbolic of. But, I mean, I don't hate him because I liked him when he was an Astro, and yeah. I hate the fact that
Luno
didn't give him that second chance that he begged for after finding something in his swing in the offseason. But he's a hell of a hitter.
I think that's why I hate him.
But it was fluky, too, in the fact that, I mean, from Garcia's standpoint, if he just threw a strike somewhere else, he didn't have to be put in that. He put himself in that position, basically. And so that bothered me. And it was an opposite field home run. And look, at that point, I thought the game, I really felt like the game was over since Boston was throwing their ace. After the first Grand Slam.
Would you have taken him out?
And I thought about it, but then I thought of what it would do to the rest of the pitching staff. So I figured
I thought it was more
like he was going to eat a lot of innings and just see where it went from there. But it turned out that Odorizzi was the guy that ended up having to absorb all of that. But regardless, they did what they had to do. And I think that the bigger thing that's a takeaway is whether you lost 2-1, 4-3, or the way that you lost against the Red Sox, it's one game in a 7-game series. This is the big one. This is why when we opened the show, I said, you know, the most crucial game in any 7-game series to me, especially when it's set up in a 2-3-2 format, is game 3. Because now game 3 establishes dominance for one team over the other. If you're the home team with 3 in a row, the one thing that you want to do is you don't want to go back on the road. And it'll guarantee that you do when you drop one at home. Well, you get that one and momentum slides with the road team a little bit. Because now you start puckering up going, the last thing I can afford to do is lose 2 at home. The way the format is set up, too. So game 3 is critical. The one thing I like a lot of things about that we've talked about in the past about Urquidy, because I like the fact that he's even keeled. He doesn't get too high or too low. He has an above average fastball, but he has the ability, no matter what the scenario is to compete. And that's all you can ask for. Throw strikes. That's another big important thing, because across the pitching staff, we've seen guys that haven't thrown strikes consistently. Since he's been back, he had the one really bad second game when he came back. Yeah. But it looks like he knows he's focused on making sure he puts it somewhere in the zone, which was critical with Garcia, too, where he got tried to get too cute. When you're struggling, the last thing you can afford to do is get cute. You got to throw some strikes and absorb whatever happens, but at least the ball's in play. That's why the best hitters in baseball only hit it 3 out of every 10 times. You got to challenge him. He didn't challenge him. So I like Urquidy on the mound, and I like the fact from on the flip side, when we're talking about Eduardo, you're talking about a guy that the Astros have seen. And they've had success against. And because he likes to bring the fastball, I think this is another one that sits right there in the Astros' wheelhouse if they can take advantage.
He does like the fastball more than his other pitches. He's not too much of a velo guy, though. He sits like mid to low 90s. As far as Urquidy goes, like, he's almost the opposite of McCullers and Fromber, though. Like, his command is never anything that you worry about. He doesn't usually have high walk games. And in fact, when he gets hit is whenever he's throwing too many strikes. Like, he falls in love with being efficient and throwing lots of strikes. And a lot of times he gets hit like an 0-2 counts, or he doesn't throw the strikeout pitch in a 1-2 count. Like, he's still living in the zone when he's so far ahead of the count, which is something to watch with Jose Urquidy today. How is he pitching with 0-2 counts, 1-2 counts when he's ahead of the count? Because he usually gets ahead of the count. He's very much a strike thrower. He's one of the best strike throwers in the league. But sometimes that works against him. Either hitters are being aggressive early in the count, or Urquidy's getting too much of the plate in those 1-2, 0-2 spots. So that's something to watch with Jose Urquidy today. Jose Urquidy pitched against the Red Sox once this season. It was a success, but it was way back on May 31st. Like, you're not talking about May 31st whenever you're about to make a start in Game 3 of the ALCS on October 18th. He beat the Red Sox that day when 6 innings, gave up 3 hits and 1 run. The guy pitching opposite him on May 31st was actually Eduardo Rodriguez. So we saw this pitching matchup earlier this season in May. Rodriguez was not good against the Astros in either one of his starts. That one against Urquidy, he gave up 6 runs in 4 2/3. And then he pitched later, June 10th, in Boston against the Astros. He gave up 6 runs in 4 2/3 in that game, too.
That's why I mentioned
the Red Sox won that game, though, 12-8.
But when you look at it, though, the biggest thing right now in the playoffs is confidence leading to momentum. I think that when you've seen the Astros at their best, they've entered into pitching matchups in which they felt good about the way that they've hit. And Lance Lynn looked no further. Lance Lynn, who had one hell of a season that, you know, the White Sox were basically calling him their ace. And the Astros said, bring that ace, because you know what he does? He throws the fastball. And you know what our track record against him is? It's really good. So let him bring his fastball, and I dare him to stay away from all of his other pitches, to throw it as many ways as he possibly can, and we'll take our chances. And you know what they did? They beat him up. And that's what I'd like to see tonight as well. I'd like to see that the Red Sox put a pitcher on the field that, you know what? A lot of times you go into it going, we don't know enough about him. We haven't seen him that much. We, you know, we're not in the same division or the same, you know, to see him frequently enough to know that we know what he's got. There's no question in this case. You're bringing a guy to the table that the Astros have seen there, been there, done that, and they look forward to doing it again. I like an Astros offense that has confidence going in that they can dominate this guy.
I think the Astros have the pitching advantage tonight. You look at the overall numbers, Urquidy 8-3 on the year, 3.62 ERA. He is a strike thrower, like we mentioned, sometimes too much of a strike thrower. Eduardo Rodriguez, 13-8, but a 4.74 ERA. Urquidy, the downside for him, he hasn't pitched since October 3rd. I'm a little worried about that. He hasn't pitched in 2 weeks.
We touched on that. Here's the X factor to me, the weather. Because when Urquidy, with the shoulder, the multiple shoulder issues, he's basically been kept in controlled environments temperature-wise, especially pitching at Minute Maid. If it's cold tonight, that could be a factor as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're hoping that he's already far enough in the rehab process and the recovery process that the shoulder wouldn't get cold, but it is a home field advantage for Boston, the fact that it is going to be kind of chilly. It's going to be in the 50s during the game.
I haven't done it on his level.
Too bad, right?
But I can 50s? Tell you, as a pitcher, you don't mind heat. Ever.
No.
Because it keeps you warm and it keeps you, you know, where you need to be. The biggest issues you have are when you're pitching in a temperature change where it gets colder, and especially when you're dealing with an injury situation. Obviously, you warm it up and it stays warm. But if it gets cold or it gets uncomfortable, that's when you can have your biggest issues. That's my concern with Urquidy.
We've also seen in the playoffs, whether it's the Astros or the Red Sox or pretty much anybody else in the playoffs, that starting pitchers going deep into games are like a thing of the past, like it's an antiquated thought. So, I mean, seeing how far these starters go in today's game is going to be interesting, too. Like, how deep does Jose Urquidy go, having not pitched in 15 days? Eduardo Rodriguez made two starts in the ALDS. In game one, wasn't good. Inning in two-thirds, gave up two hits, two walks, two runs in an inning in two-thirds. And then in game four, he went five innings, giving up two runs on three hits, striking out six. So, I mean, getting to the bullpen, I think, is important. I think the Astros have a slight bullpen advantage in this series, too, especially the back end of the bullpen. So, if you're the first one to the pen, I think would be critical in today's game as well.
It's a good call. I mean, the one thing that we didn't see coming when you and I were doing a preview of this series and talking about the strengths and weaknesses of each team was the fact that the Astros might have the strength in bullpen. You know, we said in the back end they definitely did, but those middle innings were going to be a question mark. Well, they've carried over from the White Sox series to the one thing that we do know is these guys are capable of getting outs. And just like I was talking about with momentum and confidence facing guys you faced, the numbers also start to build confidence. That bullpen out there right now thinks they can get anybody out. That, you know, whether you like it or not or you believe in them or not, that's a sidebar and a different story. This bullpen right now, based on what they did against the White Sox and what they've started to do here against the Red Sox, is they believe in themselves. Maton believes he can get guys out. Yimi Garcia believes, just put me in the situation, I'll get you out of it. You know what? Stanek has confidence. And the fact that as you go on and on, Graven might be the one guy that I'm most concerned about, and I never thought I would say that because of the fact that he's had some shaky outings. Presley gave up a home run in the game you won.
He got hit pretty hard in that game, too. Even the outs were hit hard.
The thing that I said was a strength in the Astros bullpen might be the thing I'm worried about more than the middle innings right now, because middle innings right now, the guys have proven they're getting guys out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how deep these two starters go in this game. It'll be interesting how quick of a hook both of these two managers will have. You have to figure tomorrow, kind of an unknown two for the Houston Astros. You'd love to get some innings from Jose Urquidy, but you're looking to win the game, obviously, is the more focal point. Like, you don't know who's starting game four. Zach Greinke could be an option. Framber Valdez on short rest could be an option. 3 days rest because he threw 60-something pitches. In fact, Dusty Baker mentioned how that's on the table and that he didn't feel like he would be on short rest. He said something along the lines of how it'd be on half rest because he didn't throw a lot of pitches in game one. We'll see what happens and how Dusty Baker handles his pitching staff. But first things first, game three today, of course, for the Astros. Jimbo Fisher holding his Monday press conference. Tex Ags just tweeting this. Jimbo Fisher says, I love being here. I plan on being at A&M and fulfilling my contract. I love everything about the people here and the administration here. Look, coaches lie all the time. I just don't see Jimbo Fisher as an option for LSU.
I believe that because they committed to him when they didn't have to. And he's not one of those young coaches that's trying to make a splash and make a name for themselves and get to the promised land. He's been there, done that, and he's being paid handsomely to stay there. I don't think he's going anywhere.
How many innings does Jose Urquidy go tonight for the Astros? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, are the Texans on the verge of unraveling? It's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All right, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at New Brakes. Ironically, we talk about brakes and new brakes, and the only place I talk about is from experience. It's New Brakes. They came to the studio. They did my brakes while I did a show. It was the most painless situation I've ever been in my life when it comes to getting a repair done on my automobile, because it really, they're certified technicians. Their prices are comparable with any brake shop in town. They absolutely only do brakes, so they're not going to try and upsell you on anything else. And the biggest thing is time is money. And so instead of sitting in a brake shop waiting room with bad furniture and awful TV, eating vending machine food at the mercy of some mechanic that might take hours because he just doesn't have anything that lights a fire under his butt, they come to you to do what they do. They did my car in 40 minutes or less. And time is money. It saved me. It's the same reason why instead of grocery shopping for an hour, you can basically either do curbside or have the groceries delivered to you because you're saving. You could be at your office. Aggie, Matt, and others have used them, and they've come to their work like they came to mine while they were in meetings and taking care of their stuff at their desk. The New Brakes people were doing their brakes. If you wanted to do it at the house while you are cutting the lawn or watching a game or doing whatever else you want to do to multitask, they're in your driveway or your garage, they're fixing your brakes. Mention me and ESPN 97.5, save 10% off the top, but more so than that, save time, which is money, by going to newbrakes.com. That's nubrakes.com. Save 10% when you mention me and ESPN 97.5, but then see what all of our other listeners have been raving about, the fact that it is the easiest, most painless way to get your brakes done in Houston. Check them out today. NU Brakes, newbrakes.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Fun. Sports. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Once in company, the game just outside the 10. Taylor is his first big run. Taylor breaking free. Has a lead blocker. Taylor all the way down to the 5-yard line. Terrence Mitchell saving a touchdown, but not before Taylor gashes him for 84 yards.
Good hustle by Terrence Mitchell on that play, more than Lonnie Johnson could say. Lonnie Johnson came in after the injury to the starting safety, collapsed the lung. Hope he's going to be all right. Lonnie Johnson expected to start on Sunday. Why'd you look at me with that look after I said that?
Because I would trade them all at this point. I just, Lonnie Johnson is someone that I've seen in the rumor mills as teams are going to want him. Take him.
He's lost value.
Yeah, take him right now if you can get anything for him. Justin Reed is the one guy where you can have a conversation and say, if you're not going to try and break the bank. Oh, by the way, Jamal Adams, when you go on national TV on, and you get to say whatever you want for your university and say the best in the nation, when the numbers state that you're not even one of the top 30 at your position.
You weren't a fan of that, huh?
You should probably shut your mouth. The good thing is at least you got paid and that money can't be taken away from you. But when you look at Justin Reed, that's exactly the reason why I'm not going to go Minka Fitzpatrick and Adams route and overpay a safety. If you want to be in Houston and you like it here and you want to make it work and work with us, I could see keeping that young player around. But other than that, if you want to trade for Tunsil, if you want any of the linebackers or the defensive linemen, or you're looking for someone, God forbid, in the secondary, or Brandon Cooks is that missing receiver you need on a playoff team, take him, make your best offer, because between now and the deadline, no one is off the table.
You know, something we talked about kind of to start the season and going into the season, like who on this roster, who on the 53, practice squad, whatever, is on this team when the Texans could be a potential playoff team again? And I think the earliest window when that could actually start to open is like in year three of Caserio. And even that's probably being a little bit, you know, Texans goggles, probably a little bit on the homer side. Like getting there in 3 years would be really, really quick for a roster that's not very good. But just assuming that it is in 3 or 4 years, like who on this roster could actually be part of that team that's getting this team back to the postseason?
Justin Reed.
That's it.
That's it.
And he's got an expiring deal.
And I hear people say, oh, no, you're four-string running back or you're second-string offensive lineman or this or that. I mean, look, you fill in the blanks. I'm just giving you generalities without having to call people out by name because I've heard it in so many different ways for so many different players. None of them right now on the roster as it's currently constructed are good enough because we don't know. The one guy that has at least somewhat proven himself and is still is at a young age is Justin Reed. Other than that, you're probably not going to trade Davis Mills because you just got him. But regardless, if you make me the best offer right now, it is a yard sale on Kirby. Come to NRG, make your best offer. Baker Mayfield's not the guy holding the cash box this time. It's Nick Caserio. But make your best offer. Come get whatever player fills a void and a need for you so that we do what we have to do, which is exactly that. Rebuild this team in the quickest time frame possible.
The Cubs, whenever they were at the trade deadline, they traded like half of their roster because they knew they were not a contender. They knew they needed to start the rebuild and get young players in that organization. Nick Caserio should have the same mindset. The trade deadline's on November 2nd. I would trade anybody who has value for draft picks and then see if Nick Caserio can actually be a good drafter and build the organization that way. So I hope that he is a willing-dilling son of a gun ahead of the November 2nd trade deadline. Texans seem to me, maybe they already are, on the verge of unraveling. I mean, they got hammered yesterday against Indy, and I don't think anybody expected the Texans to win that game, but you expected them to be competitive. They've been competitive most games this year outside of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. The one thing you didn't expect, though, is it to come from the locker room.
Exactly. And the veterans, too, right? Like, right. Brandon Cooks said this.
Who's an Easterby guy?
Who's an Easterby guy. He's a culture guy. He is the guy that doesn't want to be traded, even though the Texans are terrible. Brandon Cook saying after the game, coaches can yell. At the end of the day, you have to choose a man that you're going to do it right more times than not. You got to choose individually that you're going to do this for the team, and if not, then we've got to figure something else out. So you have a divide here, I think. And look, I think Brandon Cooks is on the Easterby side of the divide. He's on the culture side of the divide. But you have a divide going on right now in that locker room where you have guys buying in. You have guys that want to play hard for their head coach, David Culley, and for the culture. And then on the other side, Lonnie Johnson Jr., Deshaun Watson, before all of the allegations came out about sexual assault, they were on the other side.
Laramie Tunsil,
I don't know.
I feel like he's gotten all of his money.
See, I think Laramie Tunsil's always been kind of a me-first guy.
I agree with that, but I think when you're a me-first guy that has all your money, you decide you need surgery and you need it immediately and you don't want to be a part of all this.
Yeah, but I mean, that was for the best interest of the organization, too.
I don't think the organization was going to push back on it, but remember, initially it was he's going to try and play through it.
I think maybe the organization told him not to.
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
But I also think, like, to your analogy that you were going with just in the start of the segment, he's the guy that I've continually harped on. If indeed he is, and there's a lot of question marks whether he is, even the best or the top five left tackles in football, by the time you get good again or on the cusp of getting good again, he's not going to be one of the top five left tackles anywhere, and he's going to be in charge of guarding the most important position on the offensive line to protect your quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I would trade anybody that I could.
But I also told you the drawback on that is they care that the blowback is going to be you gave all of this to get him, and you didn't get a fraction of it in return.
See, that's where I disagree with you, though.
Because, I hope I'm wrong.
Because how can the PR be worse? You know what I mean? Like, you're almost at rock bottom PR-wise anyways. Like, how is it going to possibly be worse by trading Laramie Tunsil? I mean, your own people are, like, bashing the organization. You know what I mean?
The PR people themselves that are in charge of public relations are different, so you hope that they kind of tell them this. But I think as long as the administration remains the same from the top as it trickles down, they care what other people think. It's the reason why they didn't trade J.J. Watt, because they cared about being the bad guys that sent him out of town when he was a hero. It's the same reason they're going to care about the fact that they don't want the criticism of you gave all this up to get him, but you only got this back when you got rid of him.
What's interesting, too, is like it's very obvious that year one of Caserio and Culley, it was about culture, right? Like they realized that this wasn't a team that's going to win. Caserio flat out told us that before the first game. He's like, you know, it's about the process, not about the results. So their whole game plan in year one was to establish the culture, right? I think it's why you saw Anthony Miller get get waived. You traded a fifth rounder for him, and then he flat out waived him because I don't think he was buying into the culture. I think it's why Charles Omenihu's been a healthy scratch these last 2 weeks. It's not so much because, I mean, I don't think he's a great player, but he's probably better than some of the guys that are active, right? Is that he's not buying into the culture. I think it's why Lonnie Johnson was benched and was only forced into action because of an injury. And then when he was forced into the action, he was a lazy defender and had no interest in making a tackle on Jonathan Taylor. The whole process, as Caserio would tell you about year one, is establishing the culture. And they don't care if you're the most talented player. If you're not buying into the culture, you're not going to play. It's why Minihue's not playing. It's why Lonnie Johnson's not playing. And it's not even a talented roster, so it's not like you're benching all pros. I'm not so sure in year one that establishing that culture is really working.
It isn't, and here's the other thing that you got to worry about, Jeremy. When we think about the guys in the past, they got rid of what was quote-unquote a bad apple in Roby, right? Then you got rid of a guy that was a good dude with a bad contract in Randall Cobb, but the first thing he basically said is, you know, it was escaping from hell, and for lack of better terms or the terms that he actually used, but generalizing it by saying, you know what, I had to get out of there, and now I feel great again. But you were like, okay, those were guys at different points in their career. Now you take a true Easterby guy. You take a guy that has sung the praises and spoken the right words ever since he got here. And he's the guy delivering the message.
But he's bashing the players.
Right.
That's why there's the divide, though, right?
But he's bashing the players in such a way that it's reflective on the coaching staff and the administration.
They're not doing their job.
Right? Yeah, it's one thing if you just say it's this guy or that guy, or like when J.J. Watt had a problem with Clowney or different guys like Blacklock in the past. But it's another thing, the way he set it up and the way he delivered the message, it's clearly reflective on the coaching staff and the administration, and that's where you really have to worry.
Yeah, I think that the year one of culture is not where it needs to be. Richard Willie saying Cooks is wrong. You got millionaires that do not give a at the end of the day since the 1990s. Maybe so. 713-780-3776. Culture in year one. Are the Texans winning that battle? Not so much caring about winning games. Are they winning this culture battle in year one of Caserio and Cully? 713-780-3776. When we come back, Kansas City on the ropes yesterday. Is their season in jeopardy? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Apollo Men's Health again, but I want to tell you about Dr. O. Because Dr. O, when you go to a doctor, you feel uncomfortable as it is, and you want to be able to trust who you're dealing with so that you can have a good conversation and you can give them honest answers so they might be able to help you. Well, the reason why I speak for Dr. O and his staff is because they're those kind of people. They're not going to just sit there and try and tell you things for the sake of making sales and getting money, and whether they work or not is irrelevant. These are people that actually care about their clients, and they want them to feel like they want to feel, whether it be on a workout program again or recovering quicker, or maybe you just don't have enough energy in your life. Your health is your wealth. You need to invest in yourself, and you need to do it with people that you truly trust and know will get you results. Well, that's why I speak for Apollo Men's Health, because two locations near downtown Houston to better serve you, provide them with the environment so that you can go and talk to people. And if they ask you tough questions and you give them honest answers, they're going to get you results. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, they have answers, and they've proven it. All you got to do is go to apollomh.com and set up your first appointment. When you do, you're going to find out that most insurance is accepted, military discounts for military personnel and first responders. And more so than that, you're going to find people that care. And so, therefore, show up at that first appointment with an open mind and give them honest answers. They're going to get you results. Believe me, I speak from experience. You mentioned my name, Joel Blank. Get that free B12 shot. I get one every week. I feel more energetic when I leave the place, but it's set up in such a way that until I see them again the following week, I still feel more energy than I felt previously, and I'm doing better in my workouts. I did the full body composition analysis. I chart my progress weekly. My body fat and my weight have gone consistently down. My energy level's up, and that's what I want at this point in my life. You can do the same. Check them out today. They're good people doing great things at the two locations of Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Darrell Williams, a lone setback. They fake it to him. The quick pass, touchdown! Kansas City on the quick slant at the back of the end zone off play action. Tyreek Hill and the Cheetah finds the sweet necker of the end zone when the Chiefs need it the most.
106.5, the Wolf with the call. Great the call.
I love that call.
Give it a 10. Sweet nectar of the end zone.
I'm not going to go 10, but I love the enthusiasm, and I love it's the signature call, and it's not force-fed every time he cans the cities. I would definitely give it 9.
9?
8.5 to 9.
Whoa. Because all right.
It's what, you know, it's kind of like every good play-by-play guy has that signature that fans hang on and wait for. Gene Peterson, forever and a day with how sweet it is.
Yeah.
And you just wanted to hear it so that you knew that the game was over. Chick Hearn took it a little too far with, you know, the butter's in the fridge and the eggs are chilling and the refrigerator door shut and whatever the hell it is. Everybody that had longevity that was really good at what they did, they set it up with that. That's what Kansas City is, and that's what Chiefs fans love. It's not force-fed, and it works.
I think sweet nectar of the end zone is kind of cheesy. So I'm going to give it a 7. Give it a 7 on 106.5, the Wolf. But the Chiefs get the victory over the football team, 31-13. It was looking bleak a little bit for Kansas City. The Chiefs now just a 500 team, 3-3. Football team falls to 2-4. Kansas City was down at that half. They outscore Washington 21-0 in the second half. I tweeted out around halftime when the Chiefs were losing. I think I was the reason for the motivation. But anyways, I posed the question, is it time to have the conversation that the Chiefs could miss the playoffs?
Nope, they're not going to miss the playoffs. But it is time to take them off the pedestal of being the unequivocal, no one comes close right now, number one in the AFC. They'll make the playoffs. Look, the Raiders, whether you say they sent a message for Gruden or they sent a message that we can do this without Gruden, that's fine. The Chargers are a team to be reckoned with. But in the AFC, they'll find a way to make the playoffs. They just have too many weapons. They're just too good offensively, regardless of how bad they're playing right now. And when you look at their schedule, I think that they'll find a way to make the playoffs. But I'm all in and open to the argument that there's another team right now or two that are better than them in the AFC, and it starts with Buffalo and Baltimore.
You look at Kansas City right now, and I'm with you, too. I think that tweet a little hyperbolic and really meant more to the fact that Kansas City has some serious issues, that whether it's defensively not being able to get off the field or the fact offensively where they're trying to make too many big plays. Like, it looks like they're trying to hit the home run every single time. They figured it out there a little bit in the second half. Kansas City, if the season were to end today, they would be on the outside looking in, but not by much. 3-3 is good enough to get into a playoff spot if the season were to end today. Like, the Steelers are the 7th seed right now because of tiebreakers. So I still think Kansas City gets there at the end of the day. It is interesting to monitor, though, Kansas City and Cleveland, a couple of popular picks to win the AFC, both currently 3-3 on the season and on the outside looking in. Mahomes, after the game, and we mentioned the 21-0 second half, they outscored the football team. Mahomes said that second half saved their season.
The way we did it, even though it wasn't pretty in the first half, I mean, I feel like kind of hopefully will get us rolling. I mean, we had another bad first half, and it could have spiraled right there. I mean, it could have, how this season's gone, the adversity we dealt with, it could have spiraled. But I thought the guys, it was a lot of mental toughness to go back into battle and to go out there and believe in each other. And the defense, the way they play today, I mean, that offense has been putting up points. I mean, they have some playmakers over there, and for them to hold firm while we were struggling, I mean, that's what it takes in this league. It takes everybody. It's not the offense, not the defense. It's everybody together, coming together at the right time to be great, and that's what we want to be.
Nothing gets you smiling more than Pat Mahomes
when you were
speaking.
Saying that, and again, I like to do the show organically where I'm not – we haven't had pre-conversations on what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So the fact that I was looking at you, and in the back of my mind, I kept saying, please let him have a soundbite. Please let him have a soundbite. Because, I mean, here's the thing.
If you're Pat Mahomes and you're trying to tell me and convince yourself as much as everybody else that defense is the best defense or one of the best better defenses, you're high on crack cocaine because there's no way they are.
But I just wanted to hear him say it because – when you're pulling stuff like that, you know what you're not talking about? The fact that, was it his mom that took a shot at Tyreek Hill?
She did.
Yeah. The fact that you're not talking about Travis Kelce, you're not talking about the guys that we were all talking about before the season as being the, not one of, but the elite offenses in all of football. They completely redid their offensive line. It's supposed to be bigger and better than ever before. And the one thing where you point every finger so far, as bad as the defense has been, is the inconsistencies of the offense. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, before he got hurt, was coughing it up like someone in the doctor's office looking for a flu shot. I mean, it was just, that's not what you expected out of the talent in this team.
I mean, usually flu shots are preventative, right? 713-780-3776. I don't understand why moms are blasting teammates like on Twitter. The fact that she blamed Tyreek Hill for that interception, I just don't get it. Just quiet down. I understand you love your son, but Pat Mahomes is going to be doing all right, even if Tyreek Hill should have caught that ball that think led about, to the interception.
Think about too many moms involved in NFL too careers many. Right now. Zach Wilson's mom, Pat Mahomes' mom. I know I'm
Wasn't it LeBron something. James who told his mom to shut up?
After his mom had relations with frickin' Delonte West.
Not, I know, but that's not why he told her to shut up. Like, wasn't she like critical of something courtside and he told her to like pipe down?
James Harden's mom is outspoken. Remember Matt Barnes went after her?
Yeah.
Too many moms getting too much of the spotlight.
Like, I love moms and moms that love their children, but hey, they're professional athletes. They're going to be all right, even if there's some negative going on in their life. The Rams go to New York and they blow out the football Giants 38-11. Rams now 5-1. Giants fall to 1-5. Stafford was great, 4 touchdowns. Daniel Jones was terrible, 3 interceptions. Can't believe he was even playing. And then there was some footage of the Giants just not even trying to tackle late in the game. I think the Giants have quit on Joe Judge.
It's a shame, but because we've talked about in the past the hand that he was dealt by Dave Gettleman and by injuries, but that's the biggest thing. As much as remember preseason when he got all the team to run 100-yard sprints because he was pissed off.
There was a fight in preseason too, right?
They all bought into it because he's the coach. I'm not sure if he did the same thing tomorrow that anybody would line up on the goal line and won't be willing to run for him. The thing that's surprising to me, Jeremy, that I want to bring Dell into it on this is that, you know, I've heard so many people say the Texans are the worst team in football. It's not even close. Oh, it's close. If you've seen the Lions play, it's close. If you've seen the Jags play, but they got a win against Dell's Dolphins yesterday, but I'd still say the Jags are awful. But the one team I didn't expect to be in the mix is Miami, and that's a really good thing if you're a Texans fan because they need a quarterback, so the owner believes. But that's why I want to bring Dell in here. I watched that whole game yesterday. I was impressed by Tua. I thought Tua did a ton of good things. As much as, you know, your criticism of a guy like Davis Mills, I watched Tua and go, you could do a hell of a lot worse to start a young franchise off in the right direction with a quarterback like Tua.
I thought Tua looked pretty good, too. I was kind of impressed with what I saw from him. I watched most of that game, too. And I know that Dell watches the Dolphins a little more closely than we do. I think Tua can play.
I told you guys before the year when asking about this team, if they struggled, it would not be because of Tua. Now, I meant his play. Certainly, him getting hurt kind of derailed the season, but that team was a year ahead of schedule probably, and the flaws that weren't really, you know, exacerbated because they were finding ways to win are out there now. They weren't ever really good stop on the run. They're a feast or famine type defense, and when they're not getting a lot of turnovers, you see some of the flaws. Yesterday, their top two corners didn't play. The offensive line has actually played better the last couple weeks with some changes, so hopefully for Tua's sake that continues. I don't think he's a problem. And, of course, when you're banking on your top two receivers being guys like Devontae Parker and Will Fuller, guys who can never stay healthy, that's an issue that you're going to have to overcome. He is not an issue. This is a whole Deshaun Watson thing. Deshaun ain't going to do nothing for them. He doesn't play defense. They have one of the worst defenses in the league despite how highly priced they are. So they're a year ahead of schedule, and that's coming to bear right now. So might cost Chris Greer, the GM, his job. They're going to have to try to figure out a way to figure out why they're so expensive on defense and why they cannot put good performances together.
You think it could cost without Brian Flores' his job?
That's an interesting question because they outperform expectations in year one because they ripped it down to the studs, much like the Texans are, and they were really bad in year one until the back half of the year where they won some games, won 5 games. Last year they go 10-6. Do you drop them after a bad year? And do you blame them for that? Or you say, okay, that's your mulligan. You can't have it happen again.
It's amazing, though, Dell, that you go from a general manager that could be general manager of the year for the trades he pulled off to turn them around, turn the corner and bounce back as quick as they did, and now suddenly have him a year later being the scapegoat for everything.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that Dolphin fans and the media have an issue with. It's mostly the offensive line, which they've thrown a ton of resources at. But
they need a left tackle. I got one for you.
Okay. Sure. Part of the resources of when they traded away Laremy Tunsil, they used a pick in the first round on a left tackle. He's now a guard because of how much he struggled. They're young on the offensive line. And let's say the season progresses and they continue to get better as they get more cohesive. That will take some of the pressure off Chris Greer It's just not coming to a point where Dolphin fans thought it would be. They thought this was a playoff team. Look, when your quarterback gets hurt in week two, and for almost 17 quarters of football, you have a backup playing, that derails a year. And Jacoby Brissett, not a good backup. No. Well, certainly not this year.
Yeah, I had the Dolphins being a team in contention for the playoffs, too. In fact, I think I did have them in the playoffs, so I'm surprised that they're 1-5. That race for the first overall pick in the NFL draft certainly heating up. The Lions, the only team in the NFL without a win at 0-6. And then you have the Giants, the Dolphins, the Texans, and Jacksonville all at 1-5.
Well, the issue there for the Dolphins is that pick belongs to the Eagles.
That's right.
Now, the Dolphins have the 49ers pick, and the 49ers are 2-3 and have quarterback injury issues, so who knows how bad they'll be. But, yeah, the Eagles should feel really good right now.
That's why the Texans want the Eagles to be in the Deshaun Watson hunt.
And Carson Wentz needs to continue to play well, so that pick reverts to a
first-rounder.
Well,
continue to play, period, too.
He's too.
That's the amount of snaps on the field to make that thing guaranteed a first-round pick.
Jacksonville with the win, though, over the Dolphins, 23-20 in overtime there in London. And it snaps the 20-game losing streak for Jacksonville. I thought they were going to chase history. I thought that they might chase that down. But
the Lions got that covered for you. Lions are awful, and now you got your head coach, no matter how many kneecaps he's biting and how much caffeine he's had, he's starting to take shots at his own quarterback. You talk about a bad sign that, as I've told you guys all along, Jared Goff, smoke and mirrors, another guy that got the money way too soon. But the Lions are finding out what the Rams already knew, why they were so quick to part ways with him. He's not very good, and neither is the rest of that Lions team. I think the Lions right now, head and shoulders above everybody else, are destined to have that number one pick.
I feel bad for Jared Goff, though. You go from L.A. and this high-octane offense, and now you have to live in Detroit and play with the worst roster.
But you and I just got done talking about that, especially if it's guaranteed. The one thing, at least from an NFL perspective, on a lot of the contracts the way they used to be, but they're changing them now, is you still had to perform every single year to earn that money. The fact that he's going to be a $100 million man, whether it's in Detroit or L.A., you can go wherever the hell you want in the offseason. You can do whatever the hell you do and want to do. But if you give me that much money to walk away and then have to play in Detroit for a few more years, it'll be just fine. I don't feel bad for him at all.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, the Boston Globe is saying that Red Sox fans are smarter than Astro fans. We'll talk about it when we return. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my bookie. You're looking to put money down on games? And look, I like to bet every now and then. I like to throw some cash down. I want to make sure that if I think that there's a no-brainer, or I know more than somebody else and I want to cash in on it, I know exactly where to go. It's mybookie.ag. And the reason why I say that is because we've seen the results. We know how they take care of their customers. And as a station, we know that when you want to put money down, there's only one place to go. It's mybookie.ag. And because you're a listener of the station, you can benefit more than most. What I mean by that is if you put the promo code BET975 down, the next deposit you make at mybookie, they're going to double it up to $1,000. You could be an existing customer, you could be a previous customer, or a new customer to the betting game that wants to get in. Go to mybookie.ag, put in the promo code BET975, and immediately look at your account to see it's going to be doubling what you put in so that you have more money in your account, which means more games you can bet on with more chances to win. And on top of that, you have live in-game betting, so if you want to hedge a bet or make another bet based on how your initial wager is going, you can do that. They have all the sports to bet on, from soccer, baseball, basketball, football, college, and pro. You can do all of that as well. And the other thing is you can bet anywhere, on your tablet, on your laptop, on your desktop, on your phone. It's all because you bet at MyBookie. They also have promos coming up for almost weekly where you don't have to put any money in, but if you get involved, there's a chance that you could get money out by winning because they take care of their customers. This is why I'm telling you, if you're going to put your money down online, there's only one place to go. It's mybookie.ag. Put in the promo code BET975, reap the double the next deposit benefits, and then continue to reap all of the different ways MyBookie takes care of their customers. It's the one place to play that when you win, they're going to pay. And on top of everything else, as we continue to like to say, bet anywhere, anytime, any place with MyBookie.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Boston Globe, didn't see who wrote this, but they said the Red Sox fans are smarter than Astros fans. The Astros fans did respond quite loudly, especially in their Game 1 victory. Some unchoreographed chants. But on the whole, Minute Maid relies on the cue card approach to whipping up the fans, whether it's cheerleaders skipping back and forth atop each dugout holding Get Loud placards or Astros mascot Orbit twerking to yell and trying to get the fans to yell and make some noise from loud to louder to loudest. It never ends. That's just not how it's done at Fenway Park. We're Fenway Park. Our fans are smarter than that. How are we feeling about this, Joel Blank? Cody Stutz, Will House, joining us now as well.
It's a bunch of crap. It's the same way that a Red Sox fan base that during the regular season felt that they were in position and warranted to call the Astros cheaters seemed to forget the fact that in 2018 they did the very same crap and they used technology and they had the manager that was orchestrating it for the Astros who wasn't denying the fact that he brought it with him over to Boston. So get real and get a clue, Boston fans. And other than that, go suck on some chowder.
I'll never understand baseball arrogance. From the baseball writers that do it to Cardinals fans to Red Sox fans to Yankees fans to Dodgers fans to Giants fans that just have the baseball arrogance, I'll never understand it.
Yeah,
the thing is, like, it's with the Dodgers too, right? The Dodgers want to throw stones consistently at the Astros, and then they forget to look at their roster and go, we have like five guys from the cheating Red Sox on our squad. Get a clue. My God, that's why everyone here has no sympathy for the Dodgers. Look, sure, you'd like to play them in the World Series and eliminate them yourself. But if you trip over your own you-know-what and in the process keep pointing fingers at everybody else, get the hell out of here.
Jose Urquidy, Eduardo Rodriguez, the pitching matchup tonight.
You asked for it. It's what you wanted. You got it. I get a little fired up.
I didn't say anything negative about it. I do like Fenway, too. It's kind of what bothers me about this article, because here you have putting Boston on a pedestal, which bothers me because I hate when people do that. But I do like Fenway Park. I'm excited to see Game 3 tonight. I think the Astros have the pitching matchup here, or the pitching advantage, Urquidy versus Rodriguez. The Astros lineup not out yet. Dusty's not put out his lineup. Cora, about what you expected. Schwarber, Kike, Devers, Bogarts, Verdugo, Martinez, Renfro, Vasquez, and Arroyo. Cody, what'd you think of the Texans game yesterday in Indy?
It's just I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, 17-3, you can still be competitive. 17-3, you can still be competitive. And then on 4th-and-2, in a position that's a clear go for it, they punt. And it's like, okay, well, actually, like, I can make an argument like, hey, that was actually a really good punt. You probably should have just regular punted last week, and maybe you beat the Patriots. But they punt, and then Lonnie Johnson just, like, runs away from where the play is happening.
He quit.
And Jonathan Taylor goes 83 yards up the sideline, and you're just like, oh, okay, now it's over. Like, 17-3, like, it was probably over. But, like, at that point, like, as soon as he's past the 50-yard line, I was like, that's it.
But, okay, but take it a step further. Not just the game being over, but the Brandon Cooks comments to me basically told you in the locker room now it seems like the season's over.
Well, I said this last week. The quickest way that you can lose the people when you're the superior, the quickest way in business is you cost people money. I don't know that David Culley's costing anybody money. But the second quickest way is you prove you don't know what you're doing. And I think David Culley has done that over the past few weeks. You just prove he just has no clue what to do. There's a lot of things about this team that are super inconsistent. There's a lot of Bill O'Brien left over on this staff that I can point to and be like, yeah, Bill did it this way, and I don't know why they're still doing it this way. So I'm really annoyed by that. It's just a big, you know, it's a big bummer to see him doing this and acting this way, because we were sold change and there's not a lot of change.
We should start handing out paper bags to Texans fans as they go into NRG Stadium. I mean, it's that bad. It's
embrace
the
suck.
It's the New Orleans Aints.
I know you're the last guy that wants to embrace the suck, but they need to embrace the suck.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's terrible. Like, who would you keep on this roster for next year aside from Davis Mills? And I said maybe Justin Reed if he's willing to give you a friendly contract.
So this is something I'll talk about this week. Justin Reed is not coming back to this team.
Like, no matter what.
Justin Reed cannot sit here and watch this happen over these years to have been on the good teams and now go through this and look around and be like, yeah, I want to be here.
Yeah.
And so for that point is, okay, if he's going to come back, you probably got to overpay him.
Right.
Well, if you're going to overpay him, why not just trade him? Yep. He's the only asset that has any sort of juice on that defense. Why not trade him? And if you feel like you have to have him back, you can bring him back in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Or that team that's trades for him is going to keep him. But Justin Reed is the only guy that's got any. I mean, call Kansas City. They need a safety bad.
I saw a trade rumor that actually had him going to Kansas City for a second-round draft pick.
Done.
Would do that in a heartbeat. You actually made one trade where you actually came out with more than what you paid for to get him in the first place. Now, go now!
Now, trades are an interesting conversation because I have a trade proposal for you guys.
All right, let's hear it.
Wednesday.
Palillo and who? Who we trade?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, Wednesday, we get a little Killer Bees bonus. Okay, you guys go an extra 26 minutes.
We are.
No, I'm just offering the trade.
Oh, okay.
You guys go an extra 26 minutes ahead of the Astros getting going. Wheelhouse gets the day off, and I'll get Mama Stutes to make y'all something delicious of your choice, and I'll bring it in, and you guys just work an extra 26 minutes, and you get a custom-made Mama Stutes dessert.
Can it not be dessert?
That's one, and two, I'm out.
You're just out?
I'm out.
Like, we can't put a conversation together.
I don't like you guys enough as it is, but then to do you that favor.
All right, it's just 26 minutes. Jeremy, what I need to get you to do the extra 26.
You bashed in that's the last fine. Couple of shows.
That's fine.
I'm not answering for him. What? I'm answering for what? Me. I don't know how my man Dell feels, but he's part of this.
Oh, no. Andrew will come in and do that.
Oh,
Andrew,
Dell, you're out.
Andrew will do that. I just need the 26-minute commitment.
I need to think about it.
I need the 26-minute commitment from
here. Here's one thing you don't make trades whenever you're pressed in the moment, right? You have to sit around. You have to think about it. You have to make an educated decision. You have to have a little bit of a negotiation. Like, dessert for me is out. Like, I don't want to do it for dessert.
Push back. Okay. Go chicken, pepperoni,
well, I don't
marinara.
Want that either. My wife makes a
and
good
you can eat it in the
chicken,
car.
Pepperoni, marinara. Why would I do that? That doesn't
okay,
make any
what?
Sense.
What?
You can compare at least, but you get something that you at least you like.
Here's what I need from you, Cody.
Okay,
I'm going to need an option of 5 really good entrees.
Okay,
and then we'll discuss.
Okay.
And then we'll, and it might take
and
more than
size.
One.
And serving size.
Yep, serving
not
size.
Not just for you.
We'll put together. Of
why are you trying to get out work of work, Cody? Don't you love this job?
I do love this job, but I love doing 4 hours or 3.5 hours, not 26 minutes at a time.
Anybody ever check the record of the people dedicated so much that they did less than a half hour when they didn't have to come in and do it for a day?
We never offered Palillo any trades.
No, we just came in and did our job.
Well, that's why, I mean, you guys do the job. And so, like, I'm offering you a trade to just do a little bit more of the job. Don't you guys love this enough to do an additional 26 minutes?
The problem is I live further away than 30 minutes, so it would be difficult for me to get to the house by the time first pitch is happening.
Mm.
So that's going to throw a little wrinkle in the negotiations, too.
Now, the lifers, Cody, do you consider yourself a lifer in this business?
I am a lifer, yes.
Because the lifers feel like the one thing that really hurts them the most is not being able to do what they wanted to do for a lifetime, so that when they get the opportunity to do it again, there's no way that they ever want to succumb to it or let go of it again.
Charlie was literally off today.
Every opportunity.
Charlie took off today. Like, he missed. Like, I mean,
Charlie was paid to be a lifer, let's be honest.
Okay.
But he was paid so well. He gets those days off. I mean, I don't understand that logic.
But this is a guy that isn't, like, sitting at home. He's traveling the globe to follow baseball.
And Charlie will join us on the show. He's actually going to work a little bit today.
What do you got? What else do you have, guys?
Ask him if he wants to cover 26 minutes on Thursday. Then maybe he's that dedicated.
Palillo, and what else?
But that wouldn't be a seamless transition. He'd have to come back to do that. You know.
Okay.
All right.
Palillo, and what else?
You know what he's going to tell you when you ask? No. That's what he's going to say.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I've asked you twice. You didn't tell me what was coming up on the wall.
Well, Joel, I'm not going to talk over
Thanks
Joel.
So much to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse next, 3 to 7 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.